Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Almost got through that one clean. Well, Eric?
We need to simplify that. I think we need
No, it's better if it's complicated. I trip all over it.
If it's complicated, we can start adding the whole social media group into it.
We could. I'm going to have to start writing it down, because then you could try to guess like what part I'm going to forget from week to week. All right. We're going to coming off a big win over the Miami Dolphins.
Convincing.
After, coming off a huge trade, although we only gave up a fifth round pick, so an Arizona Cardinals fan would be like, what's the big deal? But it's a huge trade, something the Lions don't normally do. And we got to talk about that and a lot more, so let's stop wasting time.
Yeah, a lot of questions today. A couple of recommendations from people about format changes, so I tried to do something a little different with the organization of it today. Get some questions intermixed into when we're discussing things. And with the trade, we'll do the beginning a little bit out of order.
All right, injury news. First off, Theo Riddick with his knee out yesterday and today. Today's Thursday.
Yeah, and so this is practice number 5 without him present. I mean, well, he's present, and he has his stuff on, but he's not participating.
Not looking good for Sunday.
Yeah, right? And then his backup, or who his replacement, Amir Abdullah.
So say things were looking great for Abdullah.
Yeah, he was limited today or yesterday with an ankle injury, but full today. So he was able to come back, and he was able to do everything that he needed to do in order to, you know, have a full practice. So the ankle injury probably isn't bothering him. So if Theo does miss, it seems like they still have a third running back in the mix.
All right. Jared Davis has an injured calf, out Wednesday, limited Thursday with a wrap on his left leg.
Yeah, but it's encouraging because it's progress. Could just be he needed a day off. He's one to watch, though, just whenever you have a limited designation at this point. You want to see what happens on Friday. Right. I'm not too worried about it right now.
Ziggy Ansah, shoulder, limited Wednesday. So
and Thursday, yeah.
Stay alive.
Man, he's such a question mark. I just don't. It's 50-50, you know what I mean? He's been limited this is the third week now. And honestly, 4 of the last 5 he's been limited because we think he had that regression. He had that injury. So, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine if he's going to play.
Golden Tate with his ankle, limited Wednesday.
And, yeah, full today. So, looks like a non-issue.
Now, when I keep listing these names, it gets worse and worse. Darius Slay with his toe. Limited when on Wednesday.
Yeah, and then full on Thursday, too. Look, toe injuries are quirky because...
The old turf toe.
Yeah, like...
Now nobody gets it anymore, but remember the old turf toe?
Yeah, it killed Charles Woodson's career, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. And he came back and played 10 more years.
But yeah, Darius Slay... look, toe injuries are tricky because the only way to fix them is to rest. And so he took a day of rest, and he's back.
All right, highlighting... did we want to mention? Oh, no, we got that down there.
Yeah, got them
all. So we got 5 takeaways from the Dolphins game. This is referencing a Lions Wire article.
Nope, I didn't do an article this week again.
Here we go.
Yeah, we had all kinds of other stuff going on, so I did this just for us.
All right, so the run game execution is successful across the board. So the team rushing for 7.1 yards per carry.
And carry on went 8.3. So, look, when I say across the board, I mean, the blocking was good on the offensive line. The blocking was good from the tight ends. The running backs were executing in a manner in which they needed to. Everything really worked the way that we anticipated the run game to work. And the Dolphins are, you know, they came in with a pretty good defense, and we really controlled the offense, and it started at the line. And, I mean, look, Kerryon did have that, obviously, that great 71-yarder. But regardless of that 71-yarder, they were still...
87 yards on 18 carries minus the 71-yarder.
Right? And so that's still efficient, right? So, I mean, Blount had 50 yards.
Still over 4 yards per carry.
Yeah, and Blount had 50 yards on...
10 carries.
Right, 10, thank you.
Helped give 11 points to a very struggling fantasy team of mine.
yeah, I forgot about that. Man, what a nice play that was. Ragnow clearing out the defensive end, and then Ballore squaring up on the Mike linebacker. I mean, the hole was just... This is like, what, second week in a row that they've run that that B gap, C gap, or that... Well, technically, I think that was a B, but they in the Packers game, it was the C, but they've hit that hole, and it's just been wide open where the running... Where Blount has walked in twice. So, technically, three times. That the first one was a little harder, but he's walked in a couple times pretty easy, and that's... Man, what a change that is.
Yeah, no, things are a lot different.
Right?
Now, we'll get to more superlatives on Frank Ragnow in a minute. Matt Stafford's rolling.
I want to get to the question. No. I know I switched things up on you here a little bit.
Captain Khaki asks, do the Lions have a real rushing attack, or is Miami that bad? Because Stafford made it look really easy last week.
He did. And the Miami attack, from a statistical standpoint, is they are in the bottom half of the league. But from a DVOA standpoint, they were ranked 10th. So this was a top 10 defense against the run in terms of efficiency. So what they were able to do on the ground against them was very impressive. And yes, Stafford did make it look easy, which led into my next point.
All right, so Stafford's rolling 15-15 when the Dolphins only rushed 4 and only threw 4 incompletions for the game, hitting on 82% of his throws.
Right, his passer rating was 138.1. It is the fifth game in a row he's had a passer rating over 100, and that's currently the longest streak in the NFL. Remember, it wasn't a couple weeks ago, we were getting questions about, does Stafford look right? And
I would have agreed. I mean, he did look very poor. He wasn't
a couple games.
He wasn't completing a lot of passes. He was missing a lot of open receivers
early.
We can't forget how terrible that San Francisco game was.
Well, the Jets game was worse.
But still, airmailing those receivers in a winnable game
in the first half,
San Francisco,
for sure. Yeah. I feel like he turned it around in that second half of that San Fran game, and he really hasn't looked back since. He was PFF's top quarterback last week, and he just has looked efficient. You know, the last two games, he has done everything that he's needed to do from an efficiency standpoint, and while his yardage hasn't been good if you're a fantasy owner, if you're a Lions fan, you have to love what you see.
All right, number one in offensive line, the number one offensive line in pass protection, only 19.7% of the time they're giving up a pressure on the quarterback.
That's crazy. Not sacks, pressures. They're only giving up a pressure every 5 snaps, and under that, actually. Look.
Well, the investment's finally paying off, hopefully. I mean, we're in a good little 2-3 game stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, like, things can change in a hurry, but I mean, this is a good sign.
Yes, and so while we look at the offensive line being successful in the run game, in the first bullet point, their pass protection is even better, which is really, like you said, an ends to a means.
A beacon of hope.
Right? And all that capital and investment that Bob Quinn has been working towards for 3 years is really starting to click.
All right. Knowledge of the defensive scheme is improving leadership, or improving leading to Jared Davis's best game of his career.
Easily his best game of his career, right? I mean, like, he... Well, I think he picked the wrong gap once that I can recall. And it happened to be on that Kenyon Drake big explosion play, right? Other than that, he looked like he was hitting the right spots. His speed sideline to sideline. His tackling was efficient. His pass coverage was exceptional for a linebacker. Much improved from what we'd seen. And, you know, this is what we've seen from Davis in the past, which is why I urged patience with him. It took him 10 or 11 games last season to finally kind of click with Terrell Austin's system as a rookie. Now, as a second-year player with more experience, it looks like his learning curve is a little bit shorter. A lot of responsibility on him in this defensive scheme, but, man, things are going to get easier on him moving forward, too.
So you haven't been getting bust mail on him?
No.
Not lately?
Not in weeks.
All right, Tease is Agnew's replacement, And he looked improved on Sunday. I was surprised by how much he was playing.
He played 96% of the snaps, I believe, something along those lines. He had he was out there. He played more than Slay because Slay got dinged up with his toe on and sat out a couple of reps there. But he was out there, and we talked about the fact that he would probably slip in on the outside, and then they would push Lawson in the middle. But that he wasn't just relegated to that. They kept him. They pushed him in the slot sometimes. They used him as matchups on different guys, and he had a really tough couple of assignments trying to guard slot receivers at different points. But man, he looked sharp. I thought he got beat on a couple of plays that really any corner is going to get beat on. His tackling, though, was again really sharp. A lot of really good tackling from the defense last week.
Now, it's no surprise to me that you put Captain Khaki's question before MSU Lions fans' questions. An MSU Lions fan, I feel your pain. Seemed like the Lions defensive backs played off coverage a lot last week in an effort to keep everything in front of them and not allow big plays. What do you think about how Tease Tabor and Tracy Walker played?
So I just talked about Tease, and I thought he played well. Thought he played improved. I think he's probably going to be the guy moving forward that takes that third cornerback role. Walker, though, continues to be relegated to late-game multi-defensive back sets where he plays the safety, like the free safety that drops deep, and he's the I got to make sure nobody gets past me type of thing, right? So he's the guy who he's guarding to make sure no big plays happen. And a couple of plays happened in front of him that I think, like the Amendola touchdown. He was a little bit late for that. Tease was right there as well on the Amendola touchdown. But that was just that was a perfect throw. He couldn't do much about that. But I really wish they would expand Walker's play a little bit more than they did. But you know what? I'm okay with them getting him experience at free safety, especially late in the game like that. It's nice to get those critical reps.
All right, moving on to the moves, and we got a few big ones this week, but we'll start with the little one first. Practice squad move. The team added running back Joel Bouillagnon. I don't know. I kind of gave him a Bayou name there.
Yeah.
And released tight end Jerome Cunningham.
With Hakeem Bales on the practice squad, you don't need Cunningham anymore. And Bouillagnon is a running back that is a power running back. He started the season on Green Bay's practice squad a year prior. He was on Chicago's. So he's from Chicago area, or at least he went to college in the area there. And
Northern Illinois.
He's just with Riddicker, it just gives them another body for practice reps.
All right, and the big one. Mm-hmm. Added nose tackle Snacks Harrison, otherwise known as
Damon
Harrison,
yeah.
Gave the Giants a fifth-round pick, and we had the extra fifth-round pick from trading away Lake and Tomlinson last year. So we still have a fifth-rounder on the books.
Right, and I'm not clear if we gave them San Fran's fifth-rounder or ours, but essentially they've...
It doesn't matter which one they gave.
Right. Today. But I mean, like, technically, so essentially they've flipped Lakin for Snacks, which is really...
Which is a dream of Eric's.
Easily, right? I mean, this is... We'll touch on Snacks and his impact in a second here. But, yeah, what a shrewd move by Bob Quinn here.
All right. And, we get Harrison. There had to be a corresponding move. And I don't know if it's really surprising. I thought it was kind of surprising. But then when I thought about it for a few minutes, well, he hasn't really been playing that much, and he hasn't been effective while he's been playing. The team has released Sylvester Williams, the nose tackle signing from this summer. Mm-hmm. Eric J. Mawson says, cutting Sly, I understand his decline in snaps and performance, especially at his price tag. Is it possible he was not buying in and not getting with the program and rowing in the same direction? Well, we got a Minnesota fan here. Ricky Jean Francois is still here because he's cost effective and he's doing things the Detroit way, which is really the Patriot way.
But
I've
now
heard that a lot.
Yeah. And I think Williams bought in. I just think it was a matter of he wasn't performing at a level that he needed to be. What we saw last week from Williams was he only got About 20, he got 27% of the snaps. So that's a decent average for him. But again, the Lions are playing with the lead, so they didn't need to utilize him as much. The week prior, he got one snap against the Packers because the Lions really just jumped all over them early. But before that, he was much higher into like the 30th percentiles and stuff like that. But this is a far cry from the first week when he had a huge percentage, almost half the snaps in the first week. But that kind of slow decline, I think, was, like I said, in two parts. One, because the Lions had the lead. But I think they were moving away from him because he just wasn't as effective. With not a lot of snaps to go around and snacks added to the roster, you cut him and you save yourself about $1 million in cap space, which is something that is now all of a sudden kind of tight once you take on Snacks' contract.
All right, so now this is going to be all Snacks all the time. We're going to do a lot of talk about Damon Harrison. He's 6'3", 355 pounds, and looks every bit of it. He's Lions' version of Vince Wilfork, but a little bit lighter than Vince Wilfork in Damon Harrison's defense.
Man, is he? I mean, like, look.
They would say, like, Wilfork was, like, 335, 345, but he had to be, like, 400 pounds late in his career. He's huge.
He was. But you know what? They both have a lot of the same characteristics. And if you were going to look at a player in the NFL today and say, who is Vince Wilfork, I think Harrison's the closest you can find.
All right. And as far as advanced metrics go, he led the NFL in run stopping the last three seasons and is number two this season. And he exits New York as PFF's top player for the Giants this season. Not a big feat, but, you know, the best out of 53.
Fun stat, the Lions now have three interior defensive linemen graded by PFF in the top 13. So Snacks is the sixth best interior lineman according to them. Hand is eighth, and A'shaun Robinson is 13. When you go into just plain stopping the run, I think Snacks is 2 and A'shaun is 10. So you still have, like, right now,
you still have the number 30 ranked rush defense in the league.
Mm-hmm. Because of
what we improve.
Well, that's the thing, is what they gave up in the first couple of weeks and the couple of big runs that they've allowed have really skewed the metric for them being the 30th. But you're seeing improvement from A'shaun, you're seeing improvement from Hand, and Snacks is just a monster. So if you're going to add a player to the one of the worst rush defenses in the league,
this is the guy.
This is the guy. Yep, exactly.
All right, Chris Robbins' question. I went over a lot of the hidden impacts of Snacks deal in my pinned thread.
On his Twitter account. If you don't follow Chris, it's C_Robbins_. Smart guy. I read his pinned thread. It's good. If you want to check out what he thinks about Snacks, it's, like you said, it's pinned in there, so it's worth a read.
But I'm interested in hearing your guys' take on how this move will affect Jared Davis, Deshaun Hand, Frank Ragnow, and A'shaun Robinson, whether it be in the game, practice, film room, etc. Wow, multi-part question.
Well, like I alluded to earlier, Jared Davis is going to be one of the biggest impacted players because of this move. Because
they have Snacks, to double Snacks.
Yep, they have to. Like you've seen the nose guy, or they'll double a three technique, or they'll double the nose, and the Lions have been finding ways to beat those doubles recently. Ricky Jean beat a double on his first sack against Miami. Hand beat a double from the nose position in Green Bay for the sack fumble. Now you've got a guy you have to double that's really going to open stuff up for the other linemen. But in this scheme, it's about creating gaps for the linebackers. And, man, this should make Jared Davis's life easy, because Snacks is going to occupy these guys, and he is going to be able to own both sides of that A-gap on either side of the center. Even when he gets doubled, he's still effective in getting a hand on a running back. He can stop him with an arm. He can penetrate through those gaps. He can hold them when he needs to. It should make running lanes a lot easier for Jared Davis to identify. And, you know, the young linebacker should get a lot of help here with that. Now, as far as Deshaun Hand, again, like I just said, the doubling allows Hand to be in single coverage. And he's found ways to be successful recently, so that's going to help him as well. And that carries over to Robinson as well. Look, these guys, Robinson and Hand, have been playing well. And this is going to help kind of lighten the load on them, but it's also going to help them get better matchups. So both the defensive linemen, and you can include Ricky Jean in there as well, is that it opens up opportunities. Now, as far as Frank Ragnow, I mean, he's going to
have to deal with them in practice all the time. He's going to get yelled at when he's not trying hard enough.
And when they faced each other in the week-long practices in training camp, Ragnow learned a lesson pretty quick going up against Snacks. Snacks had the better of him quite a bit. But this is going to carry over to Glasgow, too, because he's going to get Glasgow one-on-one a lot of times, too. So it's a good learning experience for the young interior offensive lineman as well. He's a good attitude player. He's smart. He's cordial. He can be a leader, but he knows he has a good read of people in the locker room. So I like where he's I like how it carries over to the other players, and you can see how welcoming they've been to him already.
All right, Dave Parker. Will we be able to get Snacks, Han, and Ashawn all on the field at the same time, and Ziggy?
Yeah, you know what?
Well, I don't know. He loaded it up with the last name, you know.
When they want to go defense, when they want to go like big defense and try to stop the run.
They want to go four down linemen. They're on the goal line and Ziggy's healthy.
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to see that.
I mean, even if you exclude Ziggy and you put Akwara in there, you still can get Hand, Ashawn, and Snacks when you go with four down linemen. When you go three down linemen, I still think it's going to be Hand and Snacks and probably like Akwara. But Snacks' ability to play the zero technique and Ashawn and Hand's ability to play the five technique will actually allow them to run like almost like a version of the 3-4, where you can have your 2-5 techniques, a zero technique. You can stand Akwara up or Ansah up, and then you have Kennard on the other side. And that can be lethal. That can be very disruptive. And so it's something that they couldn't really do with Sly because he couldn't hold his anchor. Well, you're not going to have that problem with Snacks here.
All right, MSU Lions fan. The Lions pass defense has been ranked highly in yards allowed this year. A lot of that had to do with how poorly we defended the run. Now that we have Snacks and the run defense should improve, do you think the pass defense gets exposed more?
I mean, we've talked about this, like when you're teams are typically really good in one area, it's because they're bad in another. Lions were really bad in rushing, so they had one of the top passing off defenses in the league. But the passing defense has really shown the ability to cover. I don't think that they were finding success because the running game was so effective. I think they were finding success regardless. So, you know, sometimes when you get these early leads and they're playing, like we alluded to earlier, just keeping things in front of them and making the tackles, you know, they're going to give up yards that way. That's part of the design that the coaches want to protect a lead. But if they can start stopping the run and you can still have the good coverage that they've had, I don't think it'll expose anything. I think this is nothing but an improvement.
All right, C.A. Armstrong. Does Snacks make an impact against Seattle?
I say yes. The reason I say yes is because if he wasn't going to play, then they would have kept Sly Williams a little bit longer. The only nose tackle they have is Harrison.
And right, so for you, impact means play? What does impact mean?
I think he's going to – look.
I want to see him make a big play.
The nose –
now, that might happen because they might keep things simple. And yeah. They might want to show off for the new fans.
I think – it won't take long for him to contribute. And I think he'll still be part of the rotation where he probably won't be on the field in obvious passing downs. I still think that'll be Hand's job to man the nose in those spots. But Seattle is a run-first team, and this is the best run defender in the league. So I think he's bound to make an impact when these are two powers coming to fruition here. I think he's bound to do something. I think he will play, and I think he will make an impact play or more.
Blake Berry, do the Lions have any glaring holes on the roster now that they have added Snacks?
Well, I don't think you have glaring holes.
Yeah.
I think you have coverage and you have positions you would like to upgrade. Mm. I think there's clear spots you want to upgrade, but I don't think there's holes. I think they have guys that can do what they need to do.
They don't have a hole to tight end.
No, I think he's talking defense. I took that as defense.
You still have a hole covering the middle of the field in short routes.
Well, again, Davis is improving in that area. You know, I still think the linebacker spot next to Davis could be better. But I don't think it's a glaring hole.
What about kick returner?
No, again, I'm just focused. Okay, on, right, I'm just thinking defense.
I'm playing devil's advocate here.
I hadn't thought about it beyond just defense. Yeah, look, you have Golden Tate. I mean, there are spots that can be upgraded. But I don't think there's a spot on this team where you're like, oh, man, that is a spot where teams are going to attack. Even with T stepping up and having a third corner, I still don't think that's a glaring hole. I think it's a potential problem area, but I think there's a few problem areas, and most defenses do have them. Most teams have problem areas. But I don't think there's anything glaring right now that it's like, oh, man, what are we going to do?
All right. This is from Jimmy, by the way. How does Snacks cap hit impact this year and in the future? Hurt Ziggy's chances of re-signing, or will he have to go to the draft?
So this year, because it's a prorated deal, he's already played so many games that the Giants have covered, he ends up making around $4 million this year from the Lions. Now, the Lions entered the season with around $8 million in cap space. They've utilized two of that million with the moves that they've made over the first 6 weeks here, 7 weeks here. Now Snacks just takes $4 million of that. So that knocks them down to about two
more million.
And then they get $1 million back in the Sly, releasing Sly. So they're at about $3 million, which is not a lot, but it's still workable for what they want to do for the rest of the year. So this year, they're probably kind of locked in with what they have. Next year, his cap goes up to $7 million. But I still think that's a bargain for a guy who is a perfect fit for this system and a major hole in the defense. And even going up to 9.25 the following year, I still think is a bargain. When you look at the contracts of these other defensive tackles around the league, there's a lot of them that are going to get paid because they can pressure, they rush the passer, and they can get sacks. But this guy is exactly what they need in this system. And I think that's bargain prices that they're going to get him at. Now, will it impact getting Ziggy back? Will it impact getting Tate?
That's what I was going to say. Like, because I think Ziggy's gone. Because I don't think they're going to be able to commit all that money to a guy who's injured all the time when some other team will.
Sure.
Because they haven't had to live with it. I'm not saying Ziggy's been a problem or anything, but they haven't had to live through not having him in all these games. So they're going to be willing to pay more. Likely Ziggy's gone. It would be more business impact.
Golden Tate.
They signed Golden Tate.
Yeah, I agree. Look, and if anything, Aquara is a restricted free agent next year, and you've shown that you can skip production out of Aquara, and then if you turn to the draft to add another Aquara-type guy, but you know a better athlete, well, now you don't need to pay Ziggy this much money. I think, yeah, Ziggy's probably gone. We'll see with Tate, though. I don't know how it's – I still think Tate's going to test the market.
Dan Kinsikas, did the Lions actually make a smart trade, or is this just delirium caused by the full moon?
You know,
both are true.
Yeah, the thing that I like about this is that this isn't the first move where Quinn has traded away a 2019 draft pick to get a player that can help him win now. We also got to remember he traded away a third-round pick to get Hand. Imagine if he didn't make this trade for Snacks, and imagine he didn't trade for Hand. Where's this defensive line then? You know what I mean? Like, Bob Quinn is making smart trades, and we look at them at the time, and it's going to hurt not having a third rounder, but you've got a guy in this defense right now in Deshaun Hand, and you'll have a guy in Harrison that are going to look like bargain basement deals at this point.
It's a little bit delirium, too, but it's just because of the history of the franchise.
Oh, yeah.
It could be the full moon, too, but it's the history of the franchise. The team's not known for making smart moves. Yes, they've made a better trade than this. During the century, the Roy Williams trade was better.
Yeah.
But although they didn't convert it correctly, but like it was still a better trade.
Sure.
But this is good.
It's pretty close.
People are shocked. This is the only good team in town on the pro level. And, you know, everybody's starting to get excited, and it's probably good for us to get excited once every 20 years or so. All right, next.
Eric Masson.
Quinn has taken heat cutting Ebron, especially with the production in it at Indy. We all knew this was going to happen. Doyle hurt, though, getting his snaps. Cap savings finally used in snacks trade, so it just took some time. Is snacks team value greater than Ebron's would have been? Oh, for us, yes.
Massively. Yeah. Yes, massively.
You never would have turned into what he is in Indy with us. Never would have happened.
And
he's done with us. And he needed a fresh start.
You're talking about keeping Ebron as the... as at best fourth option on offense, probably fifth, versus a starting nose tackle in which the defense evolves around. It's a no-brainer. This is a much better use of money.
Brandon Kerr, how does the snack deal compare with Wilkerson's in Green Bay and Richardson in Minnesota, both in contract and in talent?
Well, Richardson and Wilkerson only got one-year deals, and Snacks is three. So right there, you win that battle. And then from a price standpoint, it's hard to compare because they're different positions, right? But Wilkerson's already on IR. Richardson's playing decent in Minnesota. But the impact that Snacks is going to make, I think, is going to be more significant than what Richard is showing in Minnesota.
All right, real short, Matt Staff and Brandon Kerr, what snacks are you going to buy today? And what is your favorite snack?
I did not buy any snacks today because Halloween is approaching and there's plenty of candy in the house. My favorite's Almond Joy. What's your favorite?
Yeah, I didn't happen to buy any snacks today. I just had a sandwich today for lunch, and then we just ate dinner. But my favorite snack, I have Body by Cool Ranch Doritos, which I try not to buy, just lay off of them. But that has only created a new problem. I found out that I like a lot of other snacks, you know, that have replaced them over the years where I've passed on getting them. So let's move on to Sunday's game against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yep.
The Lions are a three-point favorite. They are at home, so Vegas believes if they were on a neutral field, these two are about even teams, and judging by the records, they are.
Mm-hmm.
The referees, Walt Anderson, averaging 13.5 penalties per game, which is right about league average. But since 2012, so over the last 6 years, the Seahawks are 5-0 when he refs their games. So there might be something to that. But
Seahawks have also been
They've been very good over that period of time.
Yes.
So the broadcast team, a little jumbled up. We get Kevin Kugler, Rondé Barber, and Chris Spielman. Now we get Spielman because Tom Brenneman gets to move up to join Troy Aikman while Joe Buck is off gallivanting in the World Series.
Right.
So it's a fine crew. That's probably the number three or number four broadcasting crew for Fox, whatever. They've Spielman, it's a Lions game, so they might as well stick him in the three-man booth here.
Yep.
All right, Seahawks, we all know the head coach is Pete Carroll, who really made a name for himself at USC. His record's currently 3-3. Lions have won three of the last four games.
So Seattle. Yep.
Yeah. They both started 0-2.
Correct.
All right, last week Seattle didn't do anything. The week before that, they crushed the Raiders 27-3, ended Marshawn Lynch's season, and then lost to the Rams before that. Beat the Cardinals.
Barely beat the Cardinals.
Beat the Cowboys.
They did.
So by the transitive property of football, they're supposed to beat us.
Yeah,
the owner died. So that's an extra piece there. That provides them some mojo going into this game.
Yeah, Paul Allen died the day after they beat the Raiders, right?
Yep.
He had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which went away and then it returned. And when it returned, it came back more aggressive. He passed away. The Lions put out a statement about it. It'll be interesting to see if that does motivate them. Coming off the bye and with that, does, I think, give them some significant motivation and some game planning that they could have some wrinkles for the Lions that the Lions might not be prepared for.
All right. Offensively, they lean on the running game, seventh in the NFL, 127.8 yards per game, which is a little bit less than the Lions give up per game. The Lions are around 139. And they take deep shots down the field, and we all know that because of Russell Wilson. There's really nothing else to say about their quarterback. We know he's very good. We know he's won a Super Bowl. We know he's lost a Super Bowl. Running backs are Chris Carson, who's a fantasy darling this year. Rashad Penny, who was a first-round pick this year. He was great at San Diego State. And we actually talked about him potentially becoming a Lion instead of Kerryon Johnson when we were talking in the offseason.
I tried to caution people away from wanting him as a Lion.
And look, he hasn't done very much in Seattle.
Yep.
Mike Davis has had one big game of over 100 yards. And C.J. Procise, great college running back, not much of an NFL running back.
Right. If we look back at Russell, like, he is only throwing around 200 yards a game right now, especially over the last four.
They're very good running the ball.
And that's because
they're like the offensive version of the Lions' defense.
Well, but they're also kind of like how the Lions' offense has been operating lately.
Mm-hmm, true.
Efficient play from the quarterback position and a decent ground game. They've just been getting it from different areas. So, one of the we got questions from Kula and Richard this week asking about how we're going to contain Russell Wilson. He's a run threat, but he's actually only run the ball 17 times in six games, which is
getting older. He's settling in as a classic passer,
right? And while that threat is still there, in the last four games,
he's more judicious about using it.
Yeah. But he's only run the ball for 20 yards, 0 yards, 21, and -1 in the last four. So, I do think that they'll run a contain from the defensive line to try and keep that down because he is that threat. But he gets rid of the ball quick, and that's something the Lions will have to be conscious of. As far as their running backs, it's really been a hodgepodge. Carson is their main guy, but he had a down week last week, a good week the week before, and he was injured the week before that. Davis, who their number two option, a couple down weeks, but he played really well when Carson was hurt. And Penny, he's getting snaps now, but he had a finger injury that it's cropped up again. So it's not even clear if he's going to play. I'm less worried about Penny other than his ability to be impactful in the special teams.
All right, the wide receivers, Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, David Moore, Brandon Marshall, Jaren Brown.
Yeah, Baldwin is their guy. He's had a knee injury, but he looks healthy now. Last game, he went 6 for 91. Lockett has been the guy who stepped up in Baldwin's stay when he was injured. But, Lockett still doesn't have a 100-yard game, even though he's kind of their deep threat. But the thing that has made Lockett really impactful is that he scored 5 touchdowns in the last 6 games. So he's been a guy that Russell has really relied on. And the one thing about Russell is that he proves very loyal. When he likes a guy, he continues to utilize him. And Baldwin has been that in the past, and Lockett has been doing that this year.
All right. Tight ends are Nick Vinette, who's the only real option. They still have Daryl Daniels and Tyrone Swoops, former quarterback,
right,
turned tight end.
Now, Ed Dixon is on their PUP list, but he's practicing. There's an outside chance that they could activate him before the game, and if they do activate him from the PUP list, he could be a guy that could step in and play pretty quickly for them because they don't have a whole lot else.
All right. Offensive line from left to right, Dwayne Brown, Ethan Pottich, Justin Britt, DJ Fluker of Alabama fame, and Jermaine Ifedi.
Yeah, they gave up a lot of sacks in the first couple of games.
That's good.
But they've been better in the last four. They've given up 19 sacks on the season. Detroit has 21 on the season. They're fourth best in the league. The big problem for Seattle has been while we talked about Detroit being the number one pass blocking offense in the league, giving up a pressure only 19.7% of the time, Seattle gives up a pressure 36.7% of the time. That's the second worst in the league. So pressure is a big problem for this team. So when they don't run, they allow the pressures, and that's one of the reasons why Russell has been quick to get rid of the ball.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball for Seattle, they run a 4-3. They're fifth in scoring defense, only allowing 19.5 points per game. Run defense ranks 22nd, giving up 120.7 yards per game. So that's good for Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Yards per carry against 25th at 4.7. So Kerryon Johnson at 5.4 yards per carry had 7.1 yards per carry last week.
Right, and Kerryon's Kerryon should do well. This is an area, another game where they should be able to get Kerryon in space, and they should be able to get him some good yardage.
On that defensive line, they have defensive ends Frank Clark, Quentin Jefferson, Deion Jordan, former top pick, third overall pick, right, Deion Jordan?
Oh, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Rasheem Green, Frank Clark, Michigan Wolverine, embattled Michigan Wolverine.
Oh, well, he never finished his career at Michigan because he got
a little trouble.
He got kicked off the team for domestic violence, and but it didn't stop him from going. He still went in the second round. He's in his final year of his contract, so he's trying to earn money by trying to play well. So he's going to be a guy that's going to be a fun watch. Will be interesting to see him and Taylor Decker go at it. If he goes up against Decker and Wagner, those should be fun ones to watch, because that's really where the pass rush will come from.
All right, interior defensive linemen, Jaron Reed, Shamar Stephon, Nazir Jones, Puna Ford, and not Malik McDowell.
No, he is
his career is long over.
Yeah. Reed is a guy who was drafted after Ashon. They played next to each other at Alabama, and for a while the talk was Reed would have been the better option. But Ashon's recent emergence has really made people wonder if Ashon wasn't the better player. But Reed is a good guy, and he'll be one to pay attention to on the inside.
In the middle of the linebacking core is one of the league's best in Bobby Wagner, although he's had a lot of injuries over the years.
He's probably second best. In my opinion, he's the second best Mike in the league. I think he's fantastic.
Don't say Jared Davis.
No,
first.
Keekly. Keekly is the first.
All right. We'll see how pro Lions you really are. All right. Sam linebacker, Barcavius Mingo, and Jacob Martin, who's a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, KJ Wright is the will, but the rumors are he's not going to play.
So we better see some more Shaquem Griffin. Everybody's a big fan of it.
Very possible, right? But you know, there's a slight chance Wright could come back. That would be good for them. But most of the rumors have been he's not going to make it.
All right, in the back four or five or six, depending on the package, the Seahawks' pass defense is third in the league, giving up only 206 yards per game. They're sixth in interceptions, and also to note, turnover-wise, 13th in forced fumbles.
Side note, the Dolphins were the number one team in interceptions last week.
They didn't have any.
They didn't have any.
So we'll see what Stafford does this week.
Right.
Shaquem Griffin's brother, Shaquille Griffin, Nico Thorpe, Justin Coleman, Trey Flowers, and Akeem King.
Yeah, Griffin's the really prize here. He's the guy they'll have to worry about. But again, matchup problems with three big receivers for Detroit.
Free safeties Earl Thomas, but we know he's not playing because he famously flipped off the bench on his way off the field. Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill from Michigan.
Right.
The strong safeties, Cam Chancellor still on the PUP list. Brad McDougal and Delano Hill could also see time there.
Yeah, so their starting safeties are both out, right? And those are really the heart
very
and
good
soul.
Good safeties, although aging.
Yes, but the heart and soul of that defense resides in those two players. And with them not being there, it's really altered this secondary. Now, they've had success, but as we alluded to earlier, some of that success has been because teams have run on them.
All right, and then finally in the kicking game, Sebastian Janikowski is ageless. He continues to kick.
Yep.
Michael Dixon. Dixon's the punter. Return men, Tyler Lockett, David Moore, and Rashad Penny.
All right,
predictions. You're going to go first?
I will go first because I won last week, and now we are even 3-3. I think we're going to see a lot of runs, but I also think we're going to see some points. My prediction is Lions 27, Seattle 20.
All right. Last time I saw the Lions and Seahawks play inside of Ford Field, the year was 2005. It was the first game of the season. Sean Rogers dominated that game from the beginning to end.
Yeah.
Or no, it was 2006 season. Rogers dominated the game from beginning to end, but the defending NFC champion Seahawks won by a field goal 9-6. The game will not be as low scoring.
No.
But let's go Lions 21-17.
Ugh. All right. Well,
I don't want to bring him bad luck, but I'm choosing him to win.
You know, I think I think we're going to start seeing some tighter matchups between me and you as the weeks go on here. Now, I told you we got inundated with questions. We've gotten to a bunch of them. Let's see what we can get through.
All right. First from Picasso, which is a play on words.
I put this one for you.
Play on writing. Matthew Stafford is the best quarterback in football. Changed my mind.
This is for you.
All right. Well, Tom Brady has 5 Super Bowl rings. He's also played in 8 of them, if I'm not mistaken. He still shows off every week. He's beaten upstart Patrick Mahomes, which you may rather have than Matthew Stafford.
No.
I don't know. He might be the future of football. Oh, we don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the
He's
kid's
got
great.
A big arm.
The kid's great. But, hey, look. I'm not going to argue Matthew Stafford is the best quarterback in football. I think he's one of the top ones. I think that nothing's changed, but until Tom Brady leaves,
Aaron Rodgers has constantly gotten the better of Matthew Stafford, and I know you'll say he usually has a better team.
Drew Brees should
be in there. Same thing with Drew Brees, right. Especially in an evenly matched playoff game.
But, I mean, without spending too long on this, I think Tom Brady's
Picasso
in the league.
Picasso is wrong. But it's okay. No, it's all right. You can argue to me that he might be one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL.
Well, you know what?
His ability to throw and his athletic ability. Yeah, I would agree with you. But does he get the most out of it? No.
You know who agrees with him? PFF last week.
Yeah, that's grading a week-by-week basis. All right. Paul Basanko. Even if and when Riddick comes back, don't you think the Lions realize that Johnson needs the ball 15 to 20 times a game and should take third down plays as well? Seems hitting in the flats with just a linebacker to beat would be deadly.
Paul and I used to play hockey together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, reuniting after all these years.
Right? He found me on Twitter recently.
Well, if Eric goes missing, I know who to look for first.
Yeah, we played for years together.
Glad I called that guy.
So, yeah, I do think Johnson needs to be involved more. I think 15 to 20 is reasonable. We saw 19 last game. And I think what we saw is that when he gets more touches, he can be more productive. I don't know if he will necessarily poach third down all the time from Theo, but if Theo's, you know, still hurt, then the opportunities should continue to go to Kerryon. This is his opportunity to really seize control of that. I like 15 to 20 personally. I think 11 and 12 that he was getting earlier in the season is a little bit light. I'd like to see 15 as a minimum.
All right, so Sweta Patel, she asks, this is for Joe, which is me. As we know, Wiggins rotated with Lang on Sunday. Is this something that should be done on a regular basis, considering injury history? Well, I don't know. You probably hand me a sheet of paper, and you could give me all these reasons why it's better that they rotate him in and out. But, you know, as far as I go and see, but I've realized over the years that sometimes I get too stuck in my old football ways. Mm-hmm. But one of the ways that I'm still stuck on is the gelling of an offensive line. And injuries are just going to happen. Right. Even if you play Lang only 50% of the snaps, he still basically has the same odds of getting injured as if he's not playing 50% of the snaps and playing more like 90 or 100. I want to see that top group out there as much as possible. And like I think if we look at the numbers that the coaches of the Lions agree with me for the most part. And
for those of you who don't know.
Wiggins was a young guy. I'm sorry. Wiggins is an NFL player that's had a few NFL seasons, so he does have experience. Mm-hmm. If he was a young guy, that's our sixth offensive lineman, yeah, we should probably see him on the field more, but no.
To expand on the question is, last game, Lang saw 75% of the snaps. Wiggins got 25.
Which is, it's going up since the previous game, because I think it was 55-45. Or was that due to the concussion?
That was the concussion.
Never mind. All right.
Yep. But yeah, I think that was. I think personally, it was more because of the heat in Miami that was designed for. I agree with you, though. I think let him play because you're not going to really decrease the chance of injury by not playing him. Injuries happen.
All right. Just plain Bill. Going forward, will the Lions commit to the run game and a more balanced offense than previously, as we saw against Miami? What is the correct run-pass split goal? 50-50, 45-55, 40-60? You're going the wrong way here. There, okay. 55-45, 60-40. I would say 60-40. The numbers from last Sunday probably agree with me.
The numbers from last Sunday were 35 carries and 22 passes.
Yeah, so that's even better than 60-40.
Right, but
that's
I don't
70-44, and you can do the math from there.
But I think the goal is to be 50-50. But when you get the lead, you're going to lean more run, and when you're behind, you're going to lean more pass. I think the goal though is always going to be 50-50. And the fact that they can be successful in the run shouldn't change that goal.
Brian Ballard, is it just me or is Diggs really ascending every game? He's playing pretty good.
Yeah, I think his tackling looked really sharp last game. He's going to get dinged for some of his pass coverage because, again, that it was designed to play off and allow catches and make tackles. But the tackles were good from the secondary all around. So, yeah, I think he's... Look, there's a reason they gave him an extension, right? He's going to be a fixture in this defense.
But there's going to be he's a defensive back. There's going to be a game or two where he's going to be made to look bad. It's just the way football goes.
Yep. Nope. You're right.
All right. MSU Lions fan. Lions don't seem to be getting very many interceptions this year, like they did last year. Is this a direct result of zone coverage defenses causing more interceptions and the Lions being a mainly man coverage team? Kind of. But I would say, like, interceptions, they're gifts. They kind of just happen at times. Sometimes they'll happen in bunches. Sometimes you'll go without them. Don't forget, they've only played 6 games so far.
Yeah, I do think man makes it more challenging to get interceptions. Of Slay's 8 interceptions, 6 of them last year were when he was in zone and he just baited the quarterback into making a throw that he shouldn't have made. That's a little harder to do when he's in man. So I do think that's part of it, though.
Joe Marino, for someone who has only watched 2 Lions games this season, what's the one thing you would want to tell me about Detroit that I probably didn't know given my limited exposure and preconceptions? Is this the city or the team?
No, Joe's a Buffalo fan.
Okay.
But he's actually a national draft expert.
All right.
He's very, he has his own draft podcast, The Draft Dudes. He's a guy that I've known from a couple of years now from when the draft comes around. He's really smart guy, but he's a Buffalo fan.
So he knows we're at 61 years and counting.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, he's highly intelligent.
Right.
He, you know, he's very good at his history, but you know, he spends a lot of his time preparing for the draft, and so I'm impressed he's gotten a couple Lions games in. That's good. For me, the big thing that I think gets kind of squashed from a national perspective that Detroit doesn't get enough credit for is that I don't think they get enough credit for how they scheme pressure and how they scheme sacks. And we get stuck on these concepts of you need a pass rusher in order to produce pressure and sacks. And the Lions have one in Ziggy, but the Lions are finding ways to get it done without Ziggy. And they're doing that without any elite pass rusher on the team. They're fourth in sacks. And they've had one less game than the teams ahead of them. So I think the big national narrative is that Detroit doesn't have a pass rusher, so they must not be good at pass rush. But the scheme has really shown that that they have ways to generate it. So I think that's one narrative that is different. I think nationally people would be surprised by that.
Oh, all right. Well, and a lot of opinions on Detroit are changing these last 2 games. As far as how the team's playing, I don't know. The other thing to point out, Slay's probably even better than a lot of people give him credit for.
Sure.
So I don't know. That
I think he started getting credit.
I mean, he got credit. It's taken a long time.
Yeah, but right. I mean, Pro Bowl nods and all that. He was on NFL top NFL 100 last year, so he's starting to get that recognition.
Brad Rollins, how are you two feeling on the Lions' chances for the division in the playoffs with the remaining schedule? Record prediction.
I still think it goes through Minnesota, but I tell you, I'm not scared of Green Bay, and I'm not scared of Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm still hovering around the same point. Now, the next, it's because it's too short, too small of a sample size.
Mm-hmm.
We'll learn a lot in the next 2 games.
They're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, they're headed in the right direction.
And the way the NFC is, outside of the Rams and New Orleans, I think Detroit could beat any NFC team out there right now.
It's a hot take.
Is it, though?
No,
I mean,
I
think they could. I think the New Orleans and the Rams would give them the biggest problem. But outside of that, I think Detroit could beat most teams on any given Sunday, you know.
Mike Hodges, just how expensive will those will those Super Bowl tickets be when the Lions get there this year? Now,
I left this one in for you too.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen, but yes, I would assume the black market value of Super Bowl tickets will go way up if and when Detroit ever gets there, because a lot of people are going to be interested in being there. All right. So they'll be very expensive. Will it be this year? Well, we can only hope, but odds are they're not. Eric J. Masson. Lots of trades this year. The new NFL, Yeah, I kind of mentioned that yesterday to a friend of mine. Like, yep. It's turning into the other sports. New strategies to have cap room entering the season to buy low like the Lions did with the Giants. Wait for the fire sale. Can do it wrong as well. See Jerry Jones and any wide receiver like Amari Cooper or Roy Williams, as mentioned earlier, trades for. Trades make league more fun, sure.
I do think it's part of the new NFL.
Robert Canfield, with the Lions in a win-now mindset, should they call up Arizona and find a way to nab Chandler Jones for, like, Ansa in the second? Wouldn't the money not work out?
Nobody is trading for Ansa. Guys, if he's not healthy, one's going to trade for him. They're just not.
All right, Craig Medeiros. Now, with Hand, Ashawn, and Snacks inside, do you expect edge rusher in the first round next year?
I think it's really going to be probably one of the bigger priorities for them, for sure. And I've long...
They're going to take best available. Well, should have taken a rush defenseman this year if they didn't do it.
But I've long said, if you want to get an edge rusher, the earlier you get them, the higher the hit rate. Other positions you can wait, but with edge rushers, the earlier you get them, there's a definite fall off after. So if they want to get an impact guy, they might have to use one early. I think that will probably... Most people are going to want that, that's for sure.
Jamie Johnson, since Snacks is now a Lion, what's the biggest need in free agency, right guard or corner?
I would say corner.
Yeah, every team's biggest need in free agency is corner.
Yeah.
But right guard's going to be up there because, yeah, TJ's, they're probably not.
Well, it also depends on if Tyrell Crosby's getting snaps inside
Okay, good point. Well, we got a long way to find that out. Yes. Kyle, chances Landon Collins is in Honolulu Blue next year?
I would say no, because Tavon Wilson is still signed for a year, and you have Quinn's heir apparent, and you have Diggs. But, man, there's a lot of Giants on this defense right now, and Landon likes a lot of them, the guys that are here, Kennard and Snack. So I wouldn't rule it out, that's for sure.
Finally, Toblerone Bone asks, what is the biggest need on the roster that no one is talking about, either now or in the future?
Jesus.
I don't know. Well, we talk about all this stuff all the time.
Right. So
to me, all 53 spots on the roster are need to be refilled all the time. You know, like they need a new backup quarterback because I don't believe in Matt Castle at all.
Yeah.
But like
maybe that's
the biggest one.
Maybe that's it. Look, I long said the nose tackles should be the number one priority this offseason. That's filled.
Yeah.
So now you're looking at you need an edge rusher, you need another more linebacker depth, you need more corner depth, possibly a safety. You're probably going to need a slot. You might want to upgrade tight ends. But maybe, I mean, backup quarterback is going to be something that's going to be on that list as well. But I think those are the ones we're all talking about. I don't think there's anything sneaky that's going to show up. Maybe right guard. Maybe Lang is going to call it a career after this, and then maybe right guard becomes the one no one's talking about right now.
It's a big week this week. Big Lions win 3 out of the last 4.
Yeah.
They add a big-time nose tackle. All is right with the world with at least half of the fans because Michigan finally beat Michigan State and it was convincing. And so it's a crazy week also due to the full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot to look forward to, a lot to be excited about. Now, I'm not going to get too jacked up because the Lions, you know, they always find a way. But I got some hopes for this week.
We
have a special thank you out there.
We do. Got another nice review. We continue to get those every week now, it seems, which is terrific. Kavlik, it's Kavlick, gave us a really nice review. Someone that just happened upon us and liked what we're doing. So appreciate that. I hope the format, we just tweaked it a little bit to try and make things a little smoother. We went a little bit longer today.
Longest episode ever.
So hopefully we're able to get it all compacted in and out there for you.
So in an effort to avoid the long and winding road, we're going to leave it with just, hey, let's go Lions.